Machine with Slim on an action-packed Tuesday. You're going to hear a lot of voices today, people. A lot of people want to talk. You know why? The Bruins? The Celtics? We're in the thick of it. And Mitty is here. It's a Tuesday. He's in the thick of the studio right now. Welcome, Mitty.
Hey, it's nice to be in the thick studio.
Yes.
How's it going?
Yes, it is. Feels good. It would feel a lot better, though, if the Bruins had played a better game last night. We can point fingers. We can throw blame around. We can say why this and that. In the end, Toronto was just a little better than us.
It's a team sport. And yesterday, the Bruins looked like last year against Florida Bruins. Do you agree?
Well, I don't like to think of last year. I like to turn the page if we can at all possible. But I have to admit, you're kind of right. We're going to dig into that with Thomas Polk. He'll be up in segment two today. We'll drill down into the loss. And I think it's possible. We ended the show yesterday, Mitty, with Thomas saying he would have started Jeremy Swayman in net. And I said, I definitely want to start Ullmark, just like the plan was, every other one all the way through. And it's possible Thomas was correct with that prediction.
Oh, yeah.
We'll dive into that.
You know what's funny? I think that Jim Montgomery's to blame on that one. Obviously, he's the coach. But how do you set a plan and just stick to it in pro sports? This is what we're going to do no matter what. If you say we're going to switch back and forth and then Swayman has a phenomenal game, you stick with him.
I'm not on that side. I'm totally on the opposite end of you there. I like the plan. I'm sticking to the plan. The
All
plan
right.
for starting the show today was to have the pistol on so we could talk some NBA first. What do you think about this pistol? Did you watch the Bruins game at all last night?
No Bruins for me. I watched the best night of basketball, the best doubleheader of all time on TNT last night for NBA basketball. It was amazing. Two game winners in both games. It was just a spectacular performance all the way around.
For people that don't know, the New York Knicks were down 101-96 with about 27 seconds left, and they proceeded to score 8 points in a row to win the game. 104-101. That Knicks fan base, Pistol, I'm telling you, it's a true weapon right now.
The Knicks are on fire right now, and some of the players that you get to root for when you're cheering for that team are just a ton of fun. Josh Hart last night, I think, played every minute in the game, 15 rebounds for the guy, and he was just on fire in the first half of the game. Just came out firing away. They kept leaving him open, and he kept burying shots. He did the same thing in the fourth quarter in the first game one. He's just been on fire lately, and that team is a lot of fun to root for.
Jalen Brunson is one of my more favorite players in the league, Pistol, but I'll tell you, he did not have a good game last night. I don't have the official
24
stats.
24 points.
Yeah, but he was something like 7 for 25. Mitty, you want to check that out? I love that you could be here. Maybe you could be the stats guy for a second.
Absolutely.
Jalen Brunson was not good from the field. What did you think about his overall game, Pistol? Because I was watching the Bruins.
So Jalen Brunson, both games, he's been absolutely terrible. And the Knicks have won both games. And the way that they're winning is they're just hustling all over the court. Josh Hart is all over the place. Hartenstein is all over the place. They're playing great defense. The only frustration I have with the Knicks is they need to give me a little more Bojan Bogdanovic. I'm a huge fan of Bojan. He only got 11 minutes last night, and when he came in, he just buried threes when he was in there.
I love Tibbs.
He struggles on defense, so I don't think Thibodeau likes him.
Is that what it is? Because I'm going to say, I love Tibbs. I think he knows what he's doing, but I agree with you. They were struggling to score on offense.
You know,
why didn't he shoot more?
Thibodeau was just voted the most least, we want to play for him the least. Every player in the NBA decided that they actually don't like Thibodeau. Isn't that a little odd?
Well, I like him, and the Pistol likes him too. What do you
like
think?
That.
Why doesn't he get to play Bogdanovic a little bit more?
I don't know why, because Bogdanovic goes out there and plays pretty tough defense too. And I think, you know, he does have some bad turnovers. I think that frustrates Tibbs. But I don't know, man. If I was an NBA player, I know Tibbs works you to the bone, but he's got a team that wants to work, and that's why that fan base is so behind them. I mean, they got like a lot of stars showing up at MSG right now, and there is that team. They got a lot of people behind him right now.
Yeah, you can get behind that. Jalen Brunson, by the way, he shot 8 for 29 for 24 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, which under any normal scrutiny, that's That's a pretty decent stat line, but it's not great.
8 for 29 from the field last night. 8 for 26 the night before. So Jalen Brunson, who's far and away the Knicks' best player and best scorer right now, is cold as ice. And like you said, Pistol, they're finding ways to win. I will say the big man matchup, Hartenstein and Mitchell Robinson, when he comes in, they're throwing multiple bodies at Embiid, and he's not just able to bruise these guys around. They're battling.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing with Embiid, he is seriously injured. He should not be playing. He is, like, he can't jump for rebounds. He is staying planted on the ground in everything that he does. I think the Sixers have a huge risk in playing him right now, but he does not look healthy. He's in really bad shape. Of course, last night, not healthy. He still, you know, had over 30 points. He was a monster in the game, but he can't move. He can't move at all.
Well, let's see how much he can move when things go back to Philadelphia. I know Nick Nurse is already complaining, and he's a big-time complainer. I think he's a great X's and O's coach, but he is a complainer. They've already lodged a formal complaint against the referees from last night to the NBA because just some very questionable calls. I do think the refs wanted to have the Knicks win that game last night. What was your opinion on the officiating in that game, Pistol?
There were some strange calls. I mean, Embiid got a technical because there was a little confrontation between him and DiVincenzo in, like, the second quarter. And Embiid pushed him, like, with the ball. It was really not a place where a technical should have been called, especially in the playoffs. But these guys are, like, the Knicks are constantly bothering Embiid. Like, when the plays are over, right? They're like, knocking his shoulder. They're walking by him and purposely running into him. So they're doing a lot of things that I think are annoying the Sixers. And you know, I think the Sixers would like the refs to do something about it.
The Knicks players to the Sixers are kind of like you to me, constantly irritating and just like this gnat flying around poking me about the Boston Celtics. What'd you think about the hit? Because we didn't get to talk to you yesterday. What'd you think about Caleb Martin's hit on Jason Tatum at the end of the game?
I mean, is there any question that that's not a dirty, nasty, dirty play? He went flying in there, and I don't know if there's any excuse for him to, like, flip his body around and just basically throw his butt right into Tatum. Like, when Tatum went flying, landed hard on his back. I like the way Tatum just walked away, and I like the way that some of his teammates stepped up and got in Caleb Martin's face. But there's no place for that when you're down by 20 with 1 minute left. Everyone knows that was dirty. Hopefully the refs have a beat on that for next game because I think the Heat know they're going to have to muck this series up to have any chance.
We got a Celtics fan that'll be calling in for segment 3 that we're going to dive deep onto the physicality in this series and physicality in years past. Tell me about the Lakers and Denver. I know the Jason Tatum countdown clock that I set up back in December, that thing hasn't reset at all, but Jamal Murray's game-winning countdown clock certainly reset last night.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I wanted to open up Slim with reset Jamal Murray's clock, baby. He just hit a shot. Game-winning shot with the game tied over one of the best defenders in the NBA. Spectacular play. His team buried him afterwards. All it shows is, like, Denver had an awful game yesterday, and they still won. I don't know how they keep pulling it out, but, I mean, Reggie Jackson 0 for 5, Justin Holiday 0 for 1. There are tons of guys who shot poorly, but you've got Jokic, who's just a monster. He shot 56% from the field, made all his free throws, 20 rebounds, 10 assists. I mean, the guy... Jokic is amazing.
Well, that is absolutely why Denver can play like garbage and still win a game, because Jokic is hands down the MVP this year, and there is nobody that can even rival that. I mean, he has had such a spectacular year, and he's just still going strong.
You're so right, Mitty. I mean, the guy is incredible to watch. He's so slow out there, and so, I don't know, just amazing. He reminds me of, like, a refrigerator, in that you can't move a refrigerator. Like, the guy just comes into the lane. He buries you underneath the hoop. And then if you're a smaller guy, you try to get under him, right? Try and throw him off of his base. You can't move the refrigerator. The refrigerator just stays there.
Pistol, kind of staying there is Scott Foster, who, even though he's closely tied to gambling, fixing accusations through the years, and really lots of proof, actually, that he's involved with it. Nonetheless, he still gets appointed many a playoff game, and the note I made before I went to bed, because I did not watch all this game, I will say honestly, Pistol, I made my big star, Scott Foster, ref in the game. What was your thoughts on the refs last night in that game?
Yeah, I didn't watch the full game on that
Imposter.
One either. I think I saw a lot of the...
Imposter, I think you're calling up here, you're like some big NBA specimen fan, and you're all jacked up. You watched the two greatest playoff games of all time back-to-back on TNT, and you didn't even stay up to watch
it. And he still sounds like a pro.
No. I watched all the Knicks game. I watched the first half of the Lakers game, and then I didn't have time this morning to finish the Lakers game. So I ended up seeing the highlights instead. But the one thing I'll say about Scott Foster is I've never been a fan of him. I never like when he's one of the referees out there. I think, Slim, that you felt the same way over the years. Something's not right about that guy.
As we transition to a commercial, something's not right about that guy. You said it, Pistol. Way to get us fired up to start the show. We'll be right back after this break to talk some Bruins with Thomas Poke, the Sports Machine with Slim, WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, nhtalkradio.com. How we do it, Celtics game one. That's not how we do it, Boston Bruins game two.
No,
Mitty, what are you expecting game three out of this Bruins team? And did we drop the puck tomorrow night?
I'm expecting a full reset. I think after the game, Jim Montgomery went on and on about how I think we played a pretty good game. Very, very general. I didn't see anything that we really lacked, but. In all reality, they really did look like last year's Florida playoff team. They just weren't pushing. They weren't the team they were in game one. And I'm saying that Jim Montgomery is going to pull a hard reset, and he is going to push them, and he's going to bust them at practice, and he's going to tell them that they are going to need to skate hard and bust out a sweat. And if they're not throwing up after the game, they didn't try hard enough. That's what they need in game three.
Let's see what Thomas Poke thinks. It was strangely reminiscent, Thomas, that game last night, especially in the second and third period, where just with all our turnovers, I think Mitty has a point. It looked a little bit like last year.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, Thomas. Yeah, I don't like the flashback to last year type of stuff because I'm always staying positive. But as he says, I'm like, we just peak getting injured obviously impacted the defensive core, and we just had way too many turnovers.
Well, we knew Toronto wasn't going to go down quietly, right? They're way too good a team to just hand it over and give us a 4-0 and move on. I think, obviously, scoring the goals at the right time helps, but, you know, all in all, maybe not the best game they played, but we knew it was going to be a long series. So just regroup, come back, and play a better one the next one.
Exactly. You said it yesterday, Thomas. You said that Toronto was not just going to fade away, and you actually made reference to Austin Matthews yesterday. We talked a little bit about it, saying, like, you don't want to let this guy out of the box, and me and you were texted last night when he got stone cold. Three or four times he got stopped during the game, and I'm just like, dude, even he scored one goal, and it got reversed, right? That was him that I think knocked the one above the crossbar in, wasn't it? And it got taken off the board. It's just like, dude, this guy can't score, but that last move he made to score the game winner, that was insanity.
Yeah, it was a great play. I mean, that Domi with a nice little chip out there, but that was more a desperation play to get it out of the zone for him to glove it down, stay on side, then go down, and beautiful move there at the end. Not much for Olmark to do, who had actually a really good game. So it's, you know, one of those things, like, you know, you only help your goalie if you're only going to score two goals. Odds are you're not going to win too many games, so you got to get three or four on the board. You just got to regroup and start over. No big deal.
I think that on the Tavares goal to tie things up at 2-2, that was where I kind of lost faith. And here's why. The puck was up top, and DeBrusque absolutely whiffed on putting up some blockage. And then when Tavares shot that puck, I swear to God, Shattenkirk looked like a bullfighter. He just jouted his hips to the side, watched that thing fly by, and said, "Ole."
Was he trying to stay out of the way, thinking he was screening Ullmark? That's what I got the impression, but he was almost caught in between there. Yeah, Shattenkirk did not have a strong game last night, Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing there. That's a power play. Toronto has, like, some high-end talent. You're going to give them enough chance that they're going to get one eventually, right? And in this game, their star players, all starting with Austin Matthews, who scored the game winner and had two primary assists. Like, the guy came to play. He wasn't going to get denied. He wasn't going to listen to everybody.
Yeah. Well, I will say that Domi getting that first goal for Toronto, just what was it, 14 seconds after the Bruins scored their first goal. That was a sign that it probably wasn't going to be our night, because Domi's the guy that was all over the place being the irritant in game one, and just he took a dumb penalty and his coach called him out for it. So the fact that, you know, that's the guy that ties the game up after we score that first goal, that's just like, it wasn't our night. And that was on a crazy bad bounce, too. I think that was Lindholm who tried to clear that puck, and it just like bounced off the side, comes right back to Toronto. I felt like a lot of those loose pucks, Thomas, went Toronto's way last night. Was that my imagination?
No, they played hard. I mean, the one thing you said there, right, it's 14 seconds. You go up, you score a goal, and everybody knows it. No matter what level of hockey you play, and definitely it's the National Hockey League level, the next shift out, you can't give up a goal. You just get all the momentum on your side. Go out there and just shut them down, and then move on. 14 seconds later, just pushes the thing right the other way. And those are some of the momentum swings you're going to have during the game. But, you know, once they tied it up, and it was a close game, you have your chances, and it's tight. But, you know, as we said, right, Austin Matthews is the league-leading scorer since he joined the league. So the guy's going to get a few. Just how often can you keep him off the board like they did in game one?
I think it's about being responsive. If you look at it from that point of view, you know, the Bruins are up 1-0, and Toronto says, no, they just scored a goal. I'm going to put in twice the effort, twice the work, and I'm going to push. I'm going to get a goal. Why don't the Bruins respond when they get tied up, or when they get the, you know, give up the lead goal? Like, why don't they step up when they're pushed against the wall when other teams do?
We did it in game one.
But we didn't in game two, Jim, and that's what we're talking about.
Well, the reality there is that it's easy for us to talk about. Again, Toronto has a strong team. They're right there every year. They just need to get over the hump. That's what they are thinking, right? Last year, they won the first playoff series for them, and then they lost in the second round. But overall, they're looking at it like they're right there, and they don't want to have a repeat of the Bruins knocking them out like they did 2 years ago and 3 years ago. So they have a good team. They're going to be tight. It's going to be a long series. It's going to be tough, and you're going to need some bounces along the way. Again, they were a very physical team with over 100 hits again, both teams. Obviously, they were a little stronger in the faceoff circle, which helps. As far as power play goes, we beat them in that department. But, you know, they did get the one goal that mattered most.
The Zacha pass over to Pastrnak to take the lead. What was it, 7 seconds to go in the first period? Just what a way to go into a break. That was literally one of the best plays I've ever seen, Thomas. I don't know what the skill level the Bruins have on the top end. Like, some people have said, oh, we don't have the top end players and skill. Just like, dude, we have it. So everybody needs not panic right now. We knew this wasn't going to be easy. The Bruins during the season put us through the ringer. Remember the first half of the year? We were losing these tight games. We're going into overtime. We're blowing leads. Like, nobody's expecting this to be easy. So it's not time to panic today. Like Thomas says, it's time to just, let's regroup. Let's go in with game three. And Swayman's back in net. Right, Thomas?
Well, if that's the way they're going to go back and forth. Well, there's no reason to change it now. Not that it was all Mike's fault whatsoever, but, you know, that's the way they're going to go. So they'll stick to it and see how it goes, and then maybe make a decision after game four, see wherever you're at, you know?
How about we make a decision on Hampus Lindholm? I feel like Hampus Lindholm was out there doing absolutely nothing last night. I mean, he literally was just a guy on skates. And that guy is big and strong. And during the regular season, he's a great defender. And he's always in the right place at the right time. He's battling. He's keeping the puck out of our zone. And then the playoffs come, and he just turns into this guy where the other team is saying, hey, let's push him around because that's how we're going to get in. I mean, it's so obvious.
What did you think of Lindholm's game last night, Thomas?
Well, it might not have been the strongest game, but, you know, the Bruins did sign him to a long-term deal at a very high-end cap number. They're looking at him as right the guy right behind Charlie. So might be a little early in game two to, you know, put a damper on him and bench him. I don't think the other guys behind him are going to have much more, but again, as I said, it's hard looking at it. It's easy for us to dissect it. The Leafs weren't going to go away quietly. Hey, they got the better of them this game. I mean, the Pastrnak goal you spoke of is the same momentum changer with 8 seconds to go. I guarantee you Toronto went in the locker room, you know, with a bad feeling. We just didn't come out and put the next one in. They came out and tied it up.
You got him. Andrew Peak getting hurt, definitely. With 6 minutes left to go in the second period, I think he went out. And it just made a huge difference. To have Grizzlick out there, who's been playing great, but I think he's a little bit undersized. And when you play him and Shattenkirk as like 40% of your minutes from there on in, you're asking a lot out of the defense. And last night, we struggled with it. So there's word that Forbert might be back. I don't think he's the fastest skater. So we'll see how the D-core kind of plays out moving forward. Thomas, real quick as we wrap things up, did you watch any of the other game? Because I'll tell you what, the New York Rangers were in a big trouble last night. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was Carolina was in big trouble. They were down 3-1 with like 9 minutes left. They end up winning 5-3. I don't even know how this happened, but this Eastern Conference in the NHL is wide open.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the Islanders, that was a self-inflicted wound. You're doing so great. You're winning 3-0. You got to take it home. There is no if, ands, or buts. It was a complete breakdown. They're going to look at it. They're down 2 now. They got to go home now, get some home games, and see if they can get back into that series. But that one definitely hurts. If you're up 3-0, you cannot give that game away in the last, you know, 9-10 minutes of the third period. So that's just something they got to talk about and figure it out, because they played great up until that very, you know, last 10 minutes of the third period.
Well, I know you're probably feeling that pain a little bit, Thomas, because as a former NHL player, you did play for the New York Islanders, so I am sorry that you had to deal with that, and I wish you best of luck in Game 3 of that series. Segment 3 of this show, The Sports Machine with Slim, is up next. We're talking some old-school Boston Celtics stuff here on WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, New Hampshire Talk Radio. Celtics and Bruins, Bruins and Celtics. It is playoff time on the Sports Machine with Slim. Lots of people calling. I think we got a new caller coming up in segment 4. Going to be talking Bruins. Let's not jump ahead, though. We're segment 3 right now, and it's time to shift gears back to the Boston Celtics here. I love the back and forth stuff because it's just nonstop every night. Tonight, actually, though, there is a stoppage. There's no game. There's no Celtics. There's no Bruins. Yet they both will play tomorrow, and you will have the choice as the viewer, TV, listener, whatever, which game will be your number one option. Mitty, which game will you...
Celtics all day long.
You're Celtics number one. I'm Bruins.
But it's close. It's really close. As a person that's always been a Celtics fan, and I'm just now getting into the Bruins, later in life, it's actually a lot closer than I would have thought, because that game yesterday just set me off.
Right on. Well, I like the passion, and like you said, a longtime Celtics fan. I think we have a Celtics fan, a longtime fan on the phone right now, Tom Lane. If I'm correct, Tom, I think you had called the show a couple weeks ago, and you want some. I want you back for more.
Okay. Well, I'm back again, Slim, and how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I want you to come into this arena hot and heavy. What did you think about Caleb Martin's hit on Jason Tatum at the end of that game one?
The best take I can give you on that one is I was delighted at Tatum's reaction, or should I say non-reaction. He bounced right up. He walked away. This league does not want a repeat of the Malice in the Palace again. Never again. You remember that.
I do, with Detroit, right? Who was it that they went? It was Ron Artest was involved with that heavily, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was Ron Artest, not particularly a good boy, but there was a guy in the stand that really was the other instigator, and threw a drink on Artest while Artest was lounging on the table. So that really ignited it. And they wanted no part. The NBA wants no further part in any of that.
You think that could have happened, Tom, if Tatum, if he got up and got right in the guy's face? Because usually basketball players are all talk, blah-bitty-blah-bitty-blah. And just so you know, I got in studio with me today, Mitty, who I know he's going to have something to ask you. But what do you think about this generation of NBA players versus what we'd see back in the old school days?
Well, in the old school days, there were brawls all the time. Danny Ainge, he was always fighting. Bird had his dust up. Parrish had a couple. Rick Roby, who you don't hear much about, my God, he was clashing all the time, throwing punches. But what happens is that one game between the Pacers and the Pistons really did it. And the fellow that threw that drink onto Artest after a dust-up between Ben Wallace and Artest, was a convicted felon. He was in the stand, and he was an instigator. And he actually spent time after this incident.
Tom, so, dropping knowledge on the airwaves here. I didn't know about that. You're making it sound like the guy was a real seedy character. Mitty, what do you think about this? Did you know that?
I'll never forget that night. I was watching that game, and I will never forget when that guy, I think he was in the third row, right around half court, tossed that drink, and Artest didn't even hesitate. He just turned, took a couple big steps up into the crowd, and just went after the guy. It's crazy that anybody can drop to that level on national television and think, hey, you know what? I'm going to go throw some punches at a fan. But
it happens on the court. Tom, did you tell me once you were on or in the stands when Dr. J and Larry Bird went at it on the court? Were you in the garden for that game?
I was. So wife and I, two friends. Four of us, November 9, 1984. And what happened, I saw it all come down. Apparently, what I couldn't hear was Bird was constantly on Dr. J, Julius Erving, constantly. And Erving was having a terrible game, an awful game. And Bird was hitting everything he threw up. And this is well known now. One of the refs heard it all. Dick Pivetta, Robert Parrish commented on it well after, but Bird was constantly on Irving saying, are you going to guard me? Are you going to guard me? And he kept mocking him as far as, you can't hit. There's nothing you can do. Irving had 6 points that night, the whole game. Bird had 42, I believe, and was, and both players were suspended, by the way. Ejected.
Wow.
The big point on that one is Bavetta, the ref, kicked both out. And at the time, it was thought to be a courageous move, bouncing two superstars from a game, and people came there to watch Dr. J and Bird. And then they were ejected. They were gone.
Back in the 80s, probably into the 90s, if you were playing in a tight game, and that really doesn't compared to the Celtics Heat because it wasn't a tight game. But if you were in a tight game and your coach called a timeout, as a fan at home watching on TV, you could almost expect somebody to come back in the game and throw an elbow to a throat or hit a guy in the junk. I mean, there was always those big hits to kind of say, hey, we're here. You ain't going around us. And nowadays, you get these hits and everybody's calling for a suspension and everybody's calling for that guy needs to get fined $50,000. What has changed so much in the last 30, 40 years where you're not even allowed to enforce anything?
Well, the difference between the Bird, Dr. J altercation was the fans were not involved. I mean, it was a massive fight between various players, but the fans were not involved. When the fans get involved, that is when all hell broke loose. They had to call the troops in. They had to call extra cops in an emergency situation to calm things. There were 9 players suspended. Criminal charges were issued. Criminal charges. People went to court.
Wow.
I got a feeling, Tom, just the time we're spending talking about this today, I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to say something crazy happens in these NBA playoffs with some fans. I don't know why, because I wasn't expected to talk in detail about this like from the past, but I just got a feeling, Tom, because you kind of keep referencing it. The NBA has changed things just like because they're afraid of the fans getting involved with stuff and getting lawsuits and all this and all that. I got a feeling something's going to happen. Will it be from the Miami Celtics series? Because Eric Spoelstra is not going to go down quietly. That much I am a full believer. They're coming to play real physical tomorrow night, Tom.
Well, I mean, don't forget Pat Riley. Pat mm-hmm. Riley runs the whole thing. Riley was a sub. I mean, he was a sub virtually his whole career, but he was known for his toughness, his physical toughness. So, no, I'm still suspicious of what happened with Caleb Martin. That was after a timeout. Why call a timeout? They had lost the game.
Yeah, that was an image.
So, did he come in to do damage? I don't know.
Did he it specifically to do it to Tatum is really what was on my mind. Because he did, obviously he was told, we're not backing down physically. You need to hit the boards. You need to go after it. I'm not saying he tried to hurt Tatum. I think he just was like, I'm reckless going after the ball. I don't care who's in my way. But is it possible that they said, I want somebody to nail Tatum?
Absolutely.
Do you think that would be on the mind of Eric Spoelstra? I don't think. I think nowadays the players would be like, oh, we can't do that.
I don't think if there was any intent, I think it was an intent to rile up Tatum, if that was the way they were going. To rile Tatum up, get him involved in fisticuffs, and maybe both get ejected, and Martin and Tatum, and perhaps they both get suspended for maybe the next game, game two, okay? Which would you rather have on your team, Tatum or Martin?
That would be crazy, Tom, if that's really what went on in that huddle. I'm not saying it isn't, but, wow, that is pretty, what is it, mischievous, bad adjective for Eric Spoelstra to go to that next level. It's like, hey, let's try and get Tatum out of the game, too.
What's beautiful about it is we can watch that play over and over again. You have a million forms of social media that you can, and I already have. And I'm going to tell you right now, especially in slow motion, he came up from behind Tatum. He waited until Tatum was off the ground. Tatum was facing the opposite direction, so it was a blind hit. You see him drop his shoulder and go up into Tatum's back, which causes a little bit of rotation where Tatum came down, landed on his backbone. He almost hit his head. At that point, you know, you could kill a person if they come down that hard on their head.
You definitely could knock him out for game two. What do you think's going to happen in game two, Tom? Real quick, because we're starting to go towards commercial.
Well, I got you. But I do agree with the analysis. I watched it too. I slowed it down. He hit him low. He hit him from behind. And if Tatum had hit his head and that came really, really close, that could have been a disaster. I don't know. I mean, maybe they try to work on Kristaps Porzingis. Maybe that's the... It's going to be a battle, baby,
and I can't wait to watch it tomorrow night in between commercials of the Boston Bruins, because the Bruins are my number one allegiance right now. The Sports Machine with Slim should be your number one allegiance, everybody. WKXL Radio is on 1450 AM, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Slim, a day off for the Celtics and the Bruins, but it's not really a day off. According to Mitty, the Bruins are going to be going through like upchuck workouts on their day off.
I hope
he wants to run them through the ringer on their day off.
Suicides, baby.
Yeah, just line drills, back and forth. We're going to get ready to play Game 3 up in Toronto. We're also going to get ready right now to hear from a caller who wants to talk some Bruins action. I think it's your first time entering into the Sports Machine Arena, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's good to be with you guys.
Same.
Yeah. That was a tough one for Boston last night. You knew Toronto would come back with a response, and They're one of the better 5-on-5 teams all year long. And Austin Matthews was the best player on the ice by far last night, and that's a recipe for success for Toronto.
Are you a Bruins fan or a Toronto fan?
I am a Bruins fan who hosts the podcast, and been a Bruins fan for many, many, many years, since I can remember. Actually, it was a Brad Park game, 1983, that made me fell in love with the Bruins when he scored that overtime goal against Buffalo.
Sports is so great to bring people together, and I really do think that the Bruins can bring people in this region together if they can put together a crazy Stanley Cup-type run. I think they have it in them, but I will say, Austin Matthews, it's almost like maybe we let the horse out of the barn, so to speak, last night with him putting in that goal at the end. It's like, now I am a little bit afraid of him.
Yeah, I mean, he's I think when he's going well, he's the best player in the world. I mean, he scored 69 goals. He had 51 even strength goals. I mean, he's an outstanding player. He's big. He's strong. He can skate. He has great hands. I mean, he's the whole package, and he really responded after. I thought he played okay in game one, but in game two, he really put the team on his back. And they're missing William Nylander, who's an excellent player, offensive player, probably their second best all-around player. And Matthews really took the responsibility on himself, and he played such a great game, and I thought Toronto really carried a lot of the play last night, and it is a little scary now for the Bruins going to Toronto and having the Maple Leafs wake up a little bit there and feeling some confidence, and now you've got to go steal at least one in Toronto to get the series back.
It's cool that the last three games the Bruins played Toronto, we won 4-1. 4-1, and then 5-1 in game one of the series. And now we lost one game 3-2, yet the key word that we're all kind of feeling is scared. So what do you see and what do you think is going to happen in game three? I would ask you, if Andrew Peak is going to be out, what do you think happens with the D-core? Because that's obviously a weakness of ours right now.
Yeah, it's Derek Forbort, because I think penalty killing-wise, Shattenkirk had to fill in for Peak, and Shattenkirk only played 6 minutes of PK all year long. And then when he was out there on the penalty kill, Toronto scored. So they're going to need a good penalty killer, and I think they'll go with Derek Forbort, who, by all indications, was done for the year and then has made a miraculous recovery. Played at Providence a couple of nights ago, played pretty well, and I think he'll be back in the lineup just for penalty killing alone, really. And I think the Bruins, they'll go back with Swayman, and I think the Bruins pull out a really gutty win in game three. I think this is going to be the game where you're going to tell whether or not the Bruins are going to have a shot to win this series is the way they respond in this game. And I think this is a game where they kind of put it all on the line and try to win this game three, regain control of the series, get their at least a split in Toronto. But I think the series is going seven anyway.
I agree with you.
I think the Bruins win game three.
I think you're absolutely right. It's definitely going to seven. And I'm looking for one player on the Bruins. And for me, it's Jake DeBrusque. He has stepped it up a little bit in this postseason. And last year, I didn't really feel like he did. But he is my X factor. And if he's going to step it up and really play hard right now and give us a reason to keep him on this squad, he's my X. Who's your X and why? Like, who do you need to step up?
I think it's Brad Marchand. I mean, I think he needs to create more 5-on-5 offense. He's not on the line with Pastrnak anymore, so he's the focal point on that line. I think DeBrusque is such a great point. He scored eight career postseason goals against the Leafs, so he has some good success against Toronto. He was the best player for Boston, I thought, or the best forward anyway in the first two games. But I think it's Marchand who needs to have more consistency. He hasn't played great the last month or so. And you have to wonder about double hip surgery, his age, and wear and tear. He played all 82 games. Is there some fatigue there? But I think it's Marchand who has to step up and help Pastrnak.
Absolutely.
Because Pastrnak's going to carry that first line, but But then it's Marchand, and he needs to create more offense for them.
Yeah, he's been kind of stepping up as a facilitator the last few games. So, you know, if you look in his stats column, you're kind of seeing a little bit more with the assists and less with the goals. But that's okay. I think he's a really good facilitator, and he's also an emotional leader for this team. And I think that if he doesn't step it up offensively, it could be okay as long as he's playing that facilitator role. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. And last night, at the end of the game, after the horn, he and Bertuzzi kind of get into it as they were leaving the ice. And I think Marchand's going to bring some of that little pesky leadership role to them in game three. I think you'll see him be more visible when it comes to after the whistle stuff and being more like him. And his personality will come out a little bit more. And I think he'll take on that role. I just like to see him get more shots on goal. More generate more 5-on-5, because that's really where the series is won or lost. This is a really good 5-on-5 team in Toronto, and if the Bruins can outplay them 5-on-5, they have an excellent chance to beat them in the series. If they don't, it's really the only way Toronto can beat them is to beat them 5-on-5 consistently.
The refs last night, it seemed to me that they were trying to keep it as much 5-on-5 action as possible. Even that one spot, it looked like they were going to go off two Maple Leafs were being called for penalties, and then they called a retribution penalty on Charlie Coyle. He really wasn't even doing anything. It was definitely tangible in the refs' minds. Like, they wanted to keep this game close, and let's see if Toronto can win a game. I don't think the refs were opposed to it, honestly, because the Bruins had spanked them three games in a row. Like, it wasn't entertaining at some level. It's entertaining for Boston Bruins fans, but not if you're trying to market hockey to the nation or to two nations and see one team get absolutely clubbed. So let's see what happens here in game three. I think you're right. On the physicality standpoint, Marchand's got to do some of it. Papineau in the first game was our guy. He laid people out. He didn't really lay anybody out last night. He almost was invisible, not for nothing, but I'll tell you who's not invisible to the Toronto Maple Leafs is Charlie McAvoy. They are roughing him up, and with our D-Core getting depleted, that's going to have an impact on this series as we go later.
Yeah, I mean, that's been the MO against Boston, is put it in deep and then lean on their defense. Carolina did it 2 years ago, Florida did it last year, and now Toronto's doing it this year, and guys like Lindholm and Grizzlick have a hard time with heavy forecheck. They have a hard time making plays out of their end, zone exits. And then McAvoy is a focal point. I mean, he's the top dog on defense. He plays a lot of minutes. They want to lean on him and wear him down. And that's kind of what happens. He was flat-footed on that goal, the game-winning goal by Matthews. The puck's up in the air. He doesn't really make a good physical play on it. Matthews just kind of catches it with his glove, drops it, skates by him, and scores. I mean, it was kind of a weird play. I mean, I know the puck's in the air, but you have to at least bury him there or make some contact with him. And he didn't, and he just kind of get caught flat-footed. You have to worry about some fatigue with him, too. I mean, he's played a lot of hockey, too, and plays a lot of minutes. And, you know, Carlo has been, I think, their best defenseman overall. So he's a steady, good defensive defenseman. But if you lose Peak, that's a struggle too. Now you got to go with either Forbort or Wotherspoon. So I don't know. I mean, they can't change the makeup of the defense right now. This is kind of who they are. They lean toward puck moving defensemen. They lean less toward physical defensemen. Not a lot of their defensemen get a lot of hits other than McAvoy in the course of a game. So they want defensemen who move the puck. Problem is that the forecheck creates the turnovers, which in two of the goals they had last night, Toronto, were a direct result of Boston not being able to clear the zone, to make a good play out of the zone, turn it over, and then it's in the net. So that's how Toronto's going to beat them, but that's been the recipe the last 2 years, is that's how you beat the Bruins, is to kind of lean on their defense and rough them up a bit, get them nervous, get them turning it over, and then the puck goes in the net. So that's not going to change. I mean, unless the Bruins can just do a better job of exiting the zone, the forwards need to help as well. Get a little deeper, be an outlet, and then just move the puck more consistently.
We got to do the same thing back to them on the other end. Excellent analysis, I will say that. So you are more than welcome to call the show at any time. Thank you for that contribution today to the Sports Machine with Slim Mitty. Thank you for your contribution. We
thank
got a
you,
couple
Jim.
Seconds here before we wrap up the show. What's your overall feel here for the Bruins in Game 3? You think we're going to win tomorrow night?
I think they're going to give it everything they got, and I think it's going to be a very tight game. I don't know who's going to win, but I think it's going to be tight.
It's going to be a tight series, baby. It's just it's going to be a tight series for everyone that we win on the road to the Stanley Cup championship season by the Boston Bruins. It's happening, people.
If we go down 2-1, it's over.
Stop that. This is WKXL Radio, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester, or you can listen on nhtalkradio.com.